Money FM 89.3, best of the evening runway. Market View on Money FM 89.3.
That's right, you're listening to Money FM 89.3. Time now for Market View, where we take a look at how the Singapore stock market is likely to close for the day, the biggest movers, sectors and companies to watch. But as always, a quick recap of how we started. While Singapore shares opened stronger today following overnight gains on global markets as easing tensions in the Middle East boosted investors' confidence. In early trade, the Straits Times Index was up 1% to 3,258 points after some 76 million securities changed hands in the broader market. And let's take you through the numbers right now. As usual, they're still firming up, but here's what I have on my screen. The Straits Times Index further in the green, up 1.47%. We are looking at 3,272 points. In terms of value turnover, that's 1.43 billion Sing dollars. The gainers outnumbered losers, 385 versus 197. Top five movers by value, we've got here DBS, UOB, OCBC, Yangtze-Jiang Shipbuilding, Sing dollars, and Singtel. Heavily traded securities, Seatrium, Yangtze-Jiang Shipbuilding, Sing dollars, and Thai Beverage. Now, in terms of companies to watch, we do have CapitaLand Ascendas REIT. Its manager yesterday said or reported a higher average rental rate of 16.9% for leases renewed in the first quarter of this year, which is up from 15.2% in the previous quarter. Now, elsewhere, from a media report on how China acquired the recently banned NVIDIA chips and Supermicro and Dell servers, to bubble tea brand Cha Pai Tao's trading debut on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange, we've got more corporate and international headlines for you. And joining me here in the studio is Kelvin Wong, senior analyst at Oenda. Kelvin, welcome.
Good to be back again, yeah.
And great to have you with us in studio. And Kelvin, let's start with the Singapore stock market as usual, right?
Sure.
How did the SGF fare today? Any surprises when it comes to the biggest movers, I believe, led by banks?
Yes. To me, I mean, it's not kind of a real big surprise. Why? Because it's more like a positive follow-through after the positive US session overnight. And do not forget that the US positive movement has been pretty much due to a short-term oversold condition where the US stock market has been down for three consecutive weeks if you look at the SPX 500 index. And what we could see over here, very interestingly, this time for today, the banks, the three local banks are actually outperforming the benchmark STI. Also, primary much also in line with the US S&P banks index as well, which also up slightly by around 1.2% yesterday overnight. And one of the primary reasons the local banks or the banks globally, especially in the US, are basking in the limelight, especially more of a short-term perspective, is due to the potential impact of this US longer-term interest rate staying pretty much higher at a higher level. So that could also lead to a much uptick potentially in NIM, which is the net interest margin for the banks.
Right, I see. Now, before we go into corporate developments, Kelvin, we've got the latest incoming Singapore inflation numbers out just a couple of hours ago.
Yes.
How would you read into the numbers? I believe easing inflation print. How far has that influenced markets in the afternoon session today?
Yes, so for if you look at from the trend of Singapore inflationary growth, it's been on the pace of, I would say, deceleration since its peak about 11 months ago. So this time around, the core inflation, that means excluding energy and food, came in much lower versus last month at 3.1% year-on-year. So I would say that is actually an encouraging sign. If you look at from a Singapore macroeconomic perspective, that means we start to see a lower cost of living, hopefully at least in the medium term. But what's interesting over here is that that could potentially put downside pressure on the Singapore dollar. So what we could see over here right now is that the global economy right now is not moving in synchronization. So on one hand, we do have the major leader, which is the US, where we start to see elevated inflation kind of being reinforced by fiscal dominance. That means, i.e., we start to see very, we call it unreluctant of physical discipline in the U.S. Administration, being said that, do not forget, this is election year as well.
Yeah.
So there's a high likelihood that they're going to keep up with their fiscal stimulus to gain popularity votes. So that could actually also pressure inflationary pressure in U.S. So we start to see the Fed getting unreluctant to actually kickstart their interest rate cut cycle for this year. So that eventually you see a bit of differentiation in terms of inflation growth globally. So yes, even though that could put downside pressure on the Sing dollar, eventually from a medium-term perspective, the cost of living could actually come back to Singapore as well, given that we are primarily more of the imported inflation nation.
Since you talked about that, I just want to provide some numbers for our listeners so that they have an idea. Headline inflation slowed to 2.7% year-on-year in March, lower than 3.4% recorded in February. Core inflation fell to 3.1%, easing from 3.6% recorded in February. And if we look at headline inflation, that's the lowest rate since September 2021. Now, if I may follow up, Kelvin, earlier you talked about imported inflation, right? When we look at the numbers right now, what bearing will this have on the MAS when it comes to monetary policy next?
Yeah, so what MAS will record to do is that we got to take into account of other economy as well as the geopolitical risk tension that is coming out of Middle East, which is primarily where oil supplies will be kind of centered as well. So going forward over here is that I will see at this point in time, the Middle East tension is rather fluid. There is still no clear signs of the related respective stakeholder backing off. And hopefully, fingers crossed, we do not need to have more stakeholders coming back into the picture where oil could primarily be used as a weapon of choice in terms of diplomacy setting. So, but unfortunately, if that happens, we could potentially see oil, taking a look at WTI crude oil, hitting about the $100 per barrel. So once that's come into play, I do believe that central bankers in Singapore will be pretty much in a more of a cautious mode to actually potentially not weakening the Sing near that much to combat against this potential spurt of imported inflation if oil prices were to hit at this level.
Yeah, I see. Now, let's zoom in on some companies to watch for today, Kelvin. We have a number of REITs. Capland Ascendas REIT manager yesterday reported a higher average rental rate of 16.9% for leases renewed in the first quarter, which is up from 15.2% in the previous quarter. At Keppel REIT, net property income for Q1 ended much up 7.2% on the year as well. Generally speaking, what does it say about the health of REIT counters looking ahead, especially when we take it together with a higher for longer interest rates narrative?
Yeah, sure. So if you look at from a medium-term to longer-term perspective, looking at the REITs, S-REIT sector using the IH S-REIT index. So year-to-date, the S-REIT index is still underperforming the local stock market, the STI benchmark. So they're actually down by a whopping negative 12% year-to-date versus almost unchanged for the STI. And for sure, the three local banks on the average actually outperforming, which average gain about close to about, depending on 8 to 7%. So if you look at the situation for the S-REIT sector in Singapore, yes, definitely we will start to face a bit of headwinds, especially if interest rate in US stays at a higher level for a longer period of time. So I'll be monitoring closely the US 10-year treasury yield. So that is a kind of a proxy for a global kind of a risk-free long-term cost of funding, or we can look at the interest rate. So if you look at the last 2 weeks or so, there's been a very strong uptick in the US 10-year treasury yield, clearing above an important resistance level at 4.5%. So now various market watchers are looking at a potential retest of last year at 5% or even much higher at 5.2%, given the much earlier we discussed on that fiscal dormance in US, where it could potentially see a fiscal budget deficit in US widening rather than narrowing.
Yeah.
So that could actually also put pressure on the S-REIT, given that the opportunity cost for S-REIT will be definitely be higher.
So that's even despite the sort of more positive news we're seeing today. If you're just tuning in, we're now in conversation with Kelvin Wong, senior analyst at Oanda. Now, meanwhile, Kelvin, let's talk about this ride-hailing apps, right? Gojek and taxi operator ComfortDelGro, they will dispatch rides not taken up by drivers to each other's platforms as part of a collaboration agreement signed back in November. A little bit like a modern ride-hailing code-share agreement here. How significant is this for both firms amid a supply crunch, or how significant is this for the industry amid the supply crunch?
Well, I do believe that is in terms of the ride-hailing industry, it should be a positive development from a fundamental perspective. Why? Because eventually, at the end of the day, it's a win-win situation for both parties. Number one, the end user will be able to get rides much more easily rather than waiting for a long time to get their desired car ride.
Yeah.
And also a better sharing of resources. So hopefully, there will be some kind of higher economies of scale. And eventually, you will actually boost up the competition. But do not forget over here is that the ride-hailing industry is more of like a highly competitive industry. So given the fact that since Gojek and Comfort has joined forces to actually implement this kind of a strategic move, the next step you've got to watch out for is what will be other competing ride-hailing firms will do next. Will they start to slash prices in terms of booking prices to gain a better market share? But eventually, in a nutshell, it actually seems to me that it may be more beneficial to the end users, which is like us, to potentially get faster rides, and hopefully eventually economy of skills come in, the booking fee may actually drop as well.
I like how you talk about lowering of prices possibly by other rivals, but then again the question really is sometimes when you look at the apps, the prices could be low but you can't get a driver at the end of the day.
Yes, yeah. Precisely.
Now across the region, from talking about ride-hailing giants, let's talk about bubble tea, Kelvin.
Yeah.
Sichuan Baicha Baidao Industrial, also known as Cha Baidao, plunged close to 40% in its trading debut on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange today. As we know, China's bubble tea boom has created about half a dozen billionaires. So is that boom really fizzling out right now, looking at the IPO performance?
Yes. So if you look at it from a behavioral perspective, it seems to me the last few weeks is more of a highly speculative in nature. And if you look at the longer term perspective from a fundamental standpoint in China, a macro situation right now, bubble tea itself, yes, definitely everyone loves to drink bubble tea in a way, but it's not a need, you see. It's more like a consumer discretionary product or services. So bear in mind, if you look at the latest China retail figures, the latest CPI, the latest PPI, and as well as the housing prices. Unfortunately, China is still facing a deflationary risk spiral. With that deflationary risk spiral coming into the picture, it doesn't actually boost consumer confidence at all in China. And given the fact that the Chinese top policymakers are actually in no hurry to actually jumpstart their local economy via, we call it ample fiscal as well as monetary policy stimulus to jumpstart consumer spending. They rather focus their attention on industrial and manufacturing, we call it activities in certain sector. So given such scenario over here, I do not see a kind of very strong outlook on consumer discretionary sector in China. So given the fact of this ongoing deflationary risk spiral that is taking shape, and as well as the priority of the China top policymakers in allocation of resources in terms of the broader based economic sector breakdown in China.
Okay. And before we let you go, Kelvin, we've got a very, very loaded question. Are you ready for it?
Sure.
Okay.
All right.
Has to do with chips and US-China. Now, a Reuters review of hundreds of tender documents shows 10 Chinese entities acquired those advanced NVIDIA chips embedded in server products made by Supermicrocomputer, Dell, and Taiwan's Gigabyte Technology Company. And that is after the US expanded the embargo to subject more chips and countries to licensing rules. Now, of course, a lot of details to go into as to whether the sellers used stockpiles that were acquired before those tightened export control restrictions, how advanced the chips are, the servers are. But generally speaking, what does it say about downstream supply chain visibility? Could the US further tighten export rules then?
Well, I think it's got to be a double-edged sword at this point in time. Do not forget over here is why do I say so. On one hand, US itself is trying to secure a ready supply of related semiconductor product and services. Both, we talk about this supply, the entire supply chain to actually come closer to US, hopefully back to the shore of US, and also closer to friendly nations with US. We call it reshoring. So if the US were to actually tighten stricter, we call it exports restriction on this company, this company itself will not be in so favor to actually set up their plants in US. That's one. That on one hand, okay. Yep. But on the other hand, what you're going to see over here is this coming year is a bit unique because of the U.S. presidential election.
Yeah.
So what's interesting over here is that for sure Trump will be very highly likely be the candidate for Republican, and as usual, he will be his Make America Great Again Volume 2. It will out and loud again. So. Yeah. One jigsaw puzzle of Make America Great is to actually China bashing, unfortunately. Okay, and we are losing popularity vote, and given the fact that Biden popularity rating has been pretty much on the downside, declining rather than up, rather than climbing up, so Biden may be forced to actually embark on very similar rhetoric like what Trump is advocating in terms of getting high tariffs on China, forceful we call it strategic materials or know-how, which is semiconductor is one of them, to prevent China from getting hold of them. So I do believe that there will be some front where we start to see rocketing up of stricter restriction, but the administrator got to be very mindful. They can't do it too tight and too firm to scare away that potential reshoring initiative that the Biden administration is kickstarting. And but during this kind of we call it a hoo-ha, one thing for sure is there will be higher volatility coming into the market. So some the swing thing about markets over here is they tend to actually listen what policymakers say first rather than what they do. So that could actually impact the market as well in terms of the geopolitical political risk premium that could be potentially inch much higher going into the second half of this year.
All right, I suppose lots to watch this year as well. Volatility, uncertainties going on. As usual, thanks a lot, Kelvin. That was Kelvin Wong, Senior Analyst at OENDA. Thank you very much for joining us on Money FM 89.3.
My pleasure.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance.